This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run with Wong Xiaoning and Lin Mark. It is now 7:36 in the morning, Tuesday, the 13th of October. And in about half an hour, we're going to have the breakfast grill. Lin, tell us more about what it's going to be. Oh, I do believe we seem to have some technical issues. Nonetheless, this morning's breakfast grill, it will be Noelle Lim, who will be speaking to Fleur Pellerin, who is the former French Minister for SMEs, Innovation and Digital Economy. Now, they're going to be discussing the obstacles faced by Europe in becoming this tech powerhouse, and also her investments interests in Europe and Asia. Also, as one of the early advocates of regulating tech giants about 7 years ago, Fleur weighs in on this contentious topic. So do tune in later after the 8 a.m. news bulletin. But in the meantime, let's talk about pandemics, because few countries around the world, if any, have been spared by it. And even our northern neighbour, Thailand, has had it quite rough. So as the Bank of Thailand has cut the GDP forecast for 2021 to a positive 3.6% from a higher positive 5% earlier on the back of slower recovery in tourism. From 2021, Bank of Thailand also only expects 9 million visitor arrivals compared to close to 40 million, which was the figure in 2019. On top of that, in recent months, Thailand has also seen a consistent wave of political turmoil as citizens have called for reform in the government and monarchy. So for 2020 alone, the central bank is projecting a GDP decline of 7.8%. So when will the Thai economy actually turn the corner? So for some insight on this, we speak to Marcus Wong, emerging market macro strategist at Bloomberg. Good morning, Marcus. Now, first question. Thailand's economy has been impacted, like we said earlier, by the COVID-19 pandemic, as tourism, which contributes as much as 15% of the GDP, has severely curtailed by COVID-19. What fiscal options does the government have to revive the economy?
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me. Well, what we have seen globally is for governments to spend their way out of a recession. And spending can usually be grouped into two main categories: spending to spur consumption and spending to spur investment. On the consumption front, the cabinet just announced in mid-September that it has allocated 70 billion baht more to boost consumption, and this includes cash incentives to the low-income group. It is in terms of spending for investment that results have been more mixed. For example, the government has only spent one-third of the 1.9 trillion baht, which comes to about $61 billion of the stimulus program that was announced back in May. What it means is that a lot of funds that have been allocated to long-term investment projects have not been disbursed. So reviving the economy will mean improving the disbursement of funds, especially those targeted at investment projects and SMEs.
And if we look more broadly, right, although the government has only spent one-third of it on investments, does it have the fiscal headroom to implement these policies? Does it have a debt headroom like Malaysia does?
There is some fiscal headroom, definitely, and I believe it is still below its deficit ceiling headline. So for example, for the 2021 fiscal year, which begins this month, the government is forecasting for a budget deficit of 3.7% of GDP, which would be the kind of the worst deficit in at least 8 years. Well, in normal times, this would be a problem, but these are not ordinary times. So foreign investors could be said to be more forgiving of a government racking up more debt and budget deficits to save the economy. The best example or comparison would be with Indonesia. Now, in normal times, again, getting a central bank to directly finance the government, or what you know, we call debt monetization, would probably see a strong sell-off in the rupiah. In addition, Indonesia's fiscal deficit forecast for this year is the widest in over two decades. But due to the extraordinary situation we are in, investors have been more accommodating of this decision. At the end of the day, I do believe that Thailand actually has more fiscal headroom to weather the COVID-19 impact, especially relative to its regional peers such as Indonesia and Philippines.
Okay, and if we look at monetary policy, do you expect the Bank of Thailand to cut rates at their next meeting in December? Because if I look at the baht, it already has reacted to that possibility. It's already one of the worst performing currencies on a year-to-date basis.
Yeah, I think, can I just say that it's been quite a real change in fortune for the baht. You know, the baht was the top performer against the US dollar last year in the whole of Asia. This year, it is actually the second worst performer in Asia, only behind the Indonesian rupiah. Of course, the low interest rates has reduced the allure of the baht. But there have been other factors that have weighed on the baht, including the fact that the Thai economy is forecast to be the worst hit in emerging Asia this year, according to a recent IMF forecast. Secondly, the political protests have also raised the uncertainty level in Thailand, partially also as the risk of COVID transmission rises with this large crowd gathering. So speaking to traders and economists onshore, it seems that there is more than a 50% chance that the Bank of Thailand will cut rates at the December meeting. Whether the central bank will actually go ahead will heavily depend on the economy in the final quarter, and investors should keep a lookout for incoming data on exports, current account, and inflation. So while a rate cut will probably further reduce the allure of the baht, I think at this moment it is the Thai outlook which is weighing heavier on the Thai currency.
And how much have the recent political uncertainties and also demonstrations have had an impact on that Thai economic outlook then?
Yeah, I think the most immediate impact of the political protests has been on foreign investor sentiment. I mean, if you look at how the offshore and onshore baht has been trading, it appears that offshore investors are pricing in the uncertainty resulting from the political demonstrations. In terms of other assets such as stocks, for example, the nation has been seeing net foreign outflows from Thai equities at every single month so far this year. And most of it has to do with the slower growth outlook ahead. Of course, you know, if political tensions continue, we could possibly see a pickup in portfolio outflows again, and a protracted standoff between protesters and the military-backed administration will definitely have an impact on the economy. And to really just to frame the whole discussion, you know, the previous anti-government protests in mid-September saw around 50,000 people protesting, and this was the largest protest since the 2014 military coup. Organizers are expecting for the demonstration on Wednesday tomorrow to see as many as 100,000 participants.
And very quickly, right, what other risks do you see for the Thai economy? I mean, even before COVID-19, there was already high household debt. How much of that is going to be an issue?
I think the two key pressure points for Thailand are still mainly the impact of COVID-19 on trade and tourism. And really, the turnaround of these two sectors will largely be dependent on the global recovery. But of course, there is hope. Thailand's key trading partner is China, and China's robust recovery will definitely mean more for Thai exports. For example, the IMF is forecasting for China's GDP this year to grow by 1%, one of the few places globally where growth is still expected to be positive. And, you know, this is best seen in the performance of the Chinese yuan, which was the top performing Asian currency against the US dollar in the third quarter. Tourism, on the other hand, will definitely be more challenging, and you know, I foresee that it may only recover in the second half of next year once the vaccine is more widely distributed. You are correct to say that Thailand's household debt to GDP is actually quite high, and I think you know the most recent data was that it's the highest in over 4 years. But again, I think the immediate risk to the economy is minimized as policy rates are at a record low, meaning it's just really lower interest costs for borrowers.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Marcus Wong, emerging market macro strategist at Bloomberg Editorial, giving us his view on the Thai economy. And for a change, the baht has come under pressure. It was the stellar currency last year in 2019, but the fortunes have somewhat reversed. And if we look at the Thai stock exchange, I mean, the SET, the index plunged just 5.6% in September last month, while regional peers actually only went down 1.9%. So it was once upon a time one of the most loved markets in ASEAN, but that title now is ours, Malaysia, because we're only down like 4%. I think it's the local defensive market nature and also the less reliance on tourism, which Thailand unfortunately needs so badly, as much as 15% of their GDP is dependent on that. But, you know, we'll be back. After this, we'll be speaking to Dato' Michael Kang, president of the SME Association of Malaysia, on how SMEs are struggling with their cash flow issues and, of course, the CMCO. Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.